Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tatho Jaya Mudirae Nashta Praeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 75, entitled Duryodhan Humiliated. Text 19 to 22. Text 19. Please repeat after me. Patni samya java prithyesh charitva tita mritvija achantam snapayam chakrur gangayam saha krishnaya Patni samya java brithyesh charitva teta mritvija achantam snapayam chakrur gangayam saha krishnaya Patni samya java brithyesh charitva teta mritvija Achantam snapayam chakru Gangayam saha krishnaya Achantam snapayam chakru Samya Java Mritesh Charitva Teta Mritvija Gangayam Saha Krishna Patni Samyaja. The ritual performed by the sponsor of the sacrifice and his wife consisting of oblations to Soma, Tvasta, the wives of certain demigods, and Agni. Our Brithyay and the rituals which solemnize the completion of the sacrifice. Charitva having executed. They, tam, him, ritvija, the priests, achantam, having sipped water for purification, snapayam, chakru, they had him bathe, gangayam, in the Ganges, Saha, along with Krishnaya, Draupadi. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. The priests led the king through the execution of the final rituals of Patni Samyaja and Avabritya. Then they had him and Queen Draupadi sip water for purification and bathe in the Ganges. No purport, text 20. Translation. The kettle drums of the gods resounded along with those of human beings. Demigods, sages, forefathers and humans all poured down showers of flowers. Text 21. All the citizens belonging to the various orders of Varna and Ashram then bathed in that place, where even the most grievous sinner can immediately be free from all sinful reactions. Text 22. Next, the king put on new silken garments and adorned himself with fine jewelry. He then honored the priests, assembly officials, learned Brahmins, and other guests by presenting them with ornaments and clothing. Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, the king not only dressed himself and decorated himself, but he also gave clothing and ornaments to all the priests and to the others who had participated in the yajnas. In this way he worshipped them all. Om Ajnantimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Akshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Yadati Sva Padantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamsa He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasyata Deshatarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we see King Yudhishthir here being very much honored and glorified and respected. So one may, the thought may come to us that a lucky king, you know, he's had it made so nice, such a wonderful life, and so comfortable and getting all the respects. But actually, as we see in the example of all the great kings, which Yudhishthir Maharaj exemplifies, that the way they see their role as a king is as a servant. They coined the term servant leader recently, and actually this exemplifies what Yudhishthira Maharaj is. That actually they saw themselves, they genuinely acted as they are the servants of all their subjects. So this leadership, whether it is Yudhishthira Maharaj or Amrish Maharaj and others, they took responsibility. They knew the difference, that leadership means taking responsibility, not ownership. Taking responsibility means if anything goes wrong, if somebody is unhappy, if some problem occurs, it is my responsibility to do the utmost, because then only the responsibility is there, and therefore the authority comes. Today we generally see that people like to take the authority and they may not take the responsibility. So here, and we see it in countless cases, Lord Ram is perhaps the most famous example of a servant leader, where his whole life was based on that, and actually that was the purpose of his descent to the world, to actually demonstrate what an ideal devotee person can be. And in his occupation as a son, as a prince, as a king, as a husband, he lived an absolutely ideal role. And so many other kings like Maharaj Rantidev, Maharaj Shibi, they gave their lives, or they were willing to give their lives when they were tested, for relatively mundane things. Maharaj Rantidev was being tested by all the demigods. They knew his glories, but they wanted to expose his glories to the world. So they came dressed in various poor people. And just when Rantidev was on a fast for 48 days, and then just when he was about to break his fast, he had not even drunk water. He was already so weak. And just at that time, one after the other, they come in different forms. There's a poor man, then there's a group of people who came asking for food. And Rantidev, just when he's about to eat, he just started giving them little by little, little by little. Ultimately, then a person comes with a pack of dogs. Even that he gave. And then finally somebody comes and asks for a glass. He had nothing else, he just had a glass of water. He was about to drink that. He was almost going to die practically. And he gave that also away. And then of course the demigods really transformed themselves and said what the purpose was. But Rantidev was not looking for that kind of glory. He just was completely consumed by the thought that he has to do what is right. So that is the difference between a real leader and so-called leaders, where not only they take responsibility, but also their mind is occupied by what is the right thing to do. It doesn't matter whether it pains them or is inconveniencing them, but if that is the right thing, if that is the general welfare and happiness of all, then that should be done. Similarly, Maharaj Shibi also, similarly the demigods wanted to test him, and they came one came as a pigeon and another one came as a hawk, and the hawk was about to kill the pigeon, and and Rantidev stopped that. So the hawk actually talks to Rantidev and says, to Shibi, and says that you are a fair king, but I am a hawk, and I am supposed to be, this is my game, you know, what will I do without that, how will I survive? So then Shibi himself offers his own flesh. So then there's a weighing scale, and he starts putting, and he actually cuts his skin and starts putting it. But and then the weight of the pigeon has to be matched, so that he was doing that. But somehow, as much as he cut, but it was already tilting. Still, it was tilting in. It was not coming to the equal level. The scales were still imbalanced. And finally, when he had practically cut all his skin, he had nothing else. Then he himself just sat on the scale, and then it balanced, which means he offered his whole life. And immediately then the demigods appeared. And so you see from these examples which Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us, as to, so Srimad Bhagavatam is primarily about Krishna's glories and his pastimes, and through that we see his great devotees, whatever the occupation, whether they were poor subjects or like Avanti Brahman, who transformed himself from was one of the worst hated people, and he became, when he learnt his lesson, and he was completely rejected, thrown, there's not a single person, his wife, his family rejected him, and he transformed himself just when he came to realization that only his mind is his enemy. So from that level to the great kings, Srimad Bhagavatam tells us about what real leadership is. So actually we, whether we like it or not, in one sense we are also, in a tiny form, we have a certain leadership, because we are, we will be an example, because people will know that they're trying to live in a very, in a world which does not consider spirituality, and I mean spirituality rather than just a religious faith, does not consider spirituality to be an essential part of one's time or one's priority. And therefore when we do that, people do look at it, people are watching, some people may be criticizing, some people may be skeptical, and not many would be appreciative perhaps, or many will have worries, even our well-wishers would have worries. But through the understanding, philosophical understanding, and the application into our day-to-day lives, we gradually, we have an opportunity and a responsibility to demonstrate and help others. So it is not for self-aggrandizement, or it's not that we are looking for and saying who can tell us, but we have to accept whatever comes in our fate, but it is our responsibility to help others, because that is the purpose that we have been chosen as the fortunate ones to be given causelessly, this mercy of Krishna consciousness. So when we, the best way we can do it is to try to incorporate in our life and see how we can take it forward. So this, I had come across a phrase recently, I think it was His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj who mentioned it, I'm not sure, but he said that you know, management is a tool, but leadership is a state of consciousness. So oftentimes whether it's a spiritual organization or whether it is external organizations or institutions, we concentrate on trying to be efficient, which is not a bad thing. We concentrate on, we only look at for instance, if you take the state of the country of India just now, and as in some parts of the other parts of the world, because we've had so much of corruption and so much of degradation, gross corruption and degradation over last, say, 20, 30 years, particularly last 10, 15 years. So the concentration is to see how, compared to see that, well, we want a clean administration, we want an efficient administration, we want people to prosper, we want to see that the schemes are effective. So no doubt that has a value, no doubt about it. And it's a great improvement. But in reality, it not only remains at the management level, but it is actually the state of consciousness of the leaders which is most important. So management can be very useful if the state of consciousness, if the leader is very aware and conscious of his overall responsibilities, which includes strengthening the spiritual base. So this is something which whether we may lament and say that this is the state of affairs here or there or in this country or that country, but in reality we individually have a role to play in whatever small way, whether we are, you know, as part of husband or wife or a son or mother or father, we have people who are connected to us and they will be influenced by what we do. So that is the responsibility we have, to try to see that we don't pretend, because we cannot pretend in a family. You know, how long can you do? Everything is exposed. On the contrary, it makes it worse. And usually, is the wife may turn around and say, okay, you know, you can fool the world, don't fool me. Right? So we have to, we are what we are. So it's not that we don't have our weaknesses, but if we try to take it seriously, then we, it is a happy responsibility. That is why we see that today, poll after poll, you know, will show that practically all countries in the world, most countries, there are a few exceptions, India is one certainly, where the leadership, the president or the prime minister or the king, and you know, they are considered, I mean, the minority only approves of them. When they keep taking polls, majority disapprove. Because there is, partly because of course the subjects also have very high expectations, not of themselves but of the leaders. So they will not bother about their lives, but they will, but that is that fickleness of fame, and that is today's Kali Yuga. But also partly because they do see the hypocrisy or the insincerity of what is spoken and what is done. So in that state, taking advantage of, taking a heed of what Yudhishthira Maharaj has shown us, how he has led his entire life in such a way that he has never demanded respect, but he has commanded respect. Automatically it has flowed to him, because people have seen how his whole life was based on trying to not to take. He was happy to even give away his the kingdom in favor of Duryodhan and his team. And we see Duryodhan, we see, as we are looking at Lord Ram, and we see the examples of Ranti Dev and others, we also have examples of Hiranyakashipu, Kans, Duryodhan, they are all in the Bhagavatam. And if you see that they were not only very powerful, they were extremely learned, very, very learned. They were not some dumb fools. They were so sharp in mind, so educated, even in the Vedas. They knew beyond what probably most people would even comprehend what is a real knowledge. So they actually understood that. But the difference was that they did not have that sacrifice for the pleasure of others, which a true leader will be looking at. It was entirely for themselves. So whatever was their power, whatever was their physical strength, the mental strength, the sacrifices also that they performed, was all done for their own material sense gratification. So this is the difference, and therefore we may be, in today's world, we may be people may be pushing us to continue. How much can we increase our earning? How much can we increase our learning? How much can we become more physically attractive? So many things, you know, which are entirely related to that level. So we have to use our sense of discrimination and see what our judgment as to what is accepted. You can't reject it. We are not going to go into the jungle, and we also need activities. So we have to use our sense of discrimination. Not only that, but we have to take guidance, and we have to take the base of philosophy to know what is, how to strike that balance between pursuing what is certainly our responsibility to our family and to future generation, in terms of seeing that they are having provided for the material comforts, but also how we can prioritize our spiritual understanding so that our behavior also becomes ideal. Awareness, I mean, people who are looking entirely of selfish desire that we must win at any cost, we must perform at any cost. It reminds me of an example in the sport of cricket some years ago, maybe 5-10 years ago. It just shows the kind of thinking that exists today. That, in a country like Australia, which is a very tough nation in terms of, they are very, they always want to win at any cost. They cannot afford to lose. They just cannot accept it also. So there was one captain who was a wicketkeeper batsman, and he was very unusual that once, at one occasion he was not given out, but he knew he was out, so he walked. Walking means you just on your own take the decision that, well, umpire is not seen, but I know I'm out, so I walk. So it was a split second decision, and he walked. And which is so rare to find, and that too in a country like Australia, which is unheard of. And sure enough,
from the next day onwards till today, there is not a single article which praised him, and everybody castigated him. His captain also spoke badly that he let down the team. Why should he do it? The umpire is paid for doing his job if he finds it right. So this is symptomatic of the thing we see everywhere. And you know, we may be caught up by that. See, today when we are in this Radha Gopinath temple hearing this, this makes sense. But when we are on our own, and if we are passionately following, say, one team, if we are connected one sport, or if we really like somebody, then somebody is cutting corners, we will be the first to excuse and say that that's fine, you know, so what, everyone is doing it. So actually our value systems also may fluctuate, and that is not true leadership. So if we have to have standards, then we have to have standards based on the basis of philosophy, basis of spirituality, which has to be constant. That is why they say that only Krishna or the truth is, or the scriptures are absolute. Everything else is relative truth. That means they can be, it depends on time, place, circumstance, it depends on the context, depends on other things. Well, these things stand the test of time, the eternally truthful. So, this is what we understand. And I also wanted to speak on, today is a very holy special day of the appearance of Advaita Acharya, and we actually fast on such a day. So I wanted to speak on a little bit on Advaita Acharya, because this is the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So perhaps there are some who may not be aware that, and we know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the incarnation of Krishna. Actually, came Krishna in Kali Yuga comes only once, and that is he came about 520 odd years ago, 530 years ago. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he comes with his associates, his closest intimate associates, and they are the Pancha Tattva. The closest are actually the Pancha Tattva, and they are the five who are on the altar, in front of the main altar. And the one on the extreme left, the only one with the beard, is Advaita Acharya. He is the oldest of them all. In fact, he was almost 52 years old when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born, and he went on to live till 125. So we may wonder, perhaps some of you may wonder, that why do we fast on his holy name on this occasion? What we don't fast on Gadadhar Pandit, we don't fast on Shivas Thakur, we don't fast on Sita, the consort of Lord Ram. Why do we fast on Advaita Acharya? What is really special about it? Well, the short answer is that Advaita Acharya is the Lord himself. He's the Lord incarnate. And he is the one who actually, his most fervent and deepest cries of anguish, you know, his strong feelings of compassion for the degradation that was around him even 500 years ago in Navadvip, caused Krishna to descend. And Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu often said that it is your cries that called me here. But if we understand the real position of Advaita Acharya, it is very important for us to know that Krishna actually is the original, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he expands as Baldev. That's his first expansion. And Lord Baldev expands as the Chaturvyuha. That's Pradyumna, Anirudh, Shankarshan, and Vasudev, who in turn expand as Lord Narayan, who is the Lord of Vaikuntha. And this Lord Narayan expands into the secondary Chaturvyuha. Again, Pradyumna, Anirudh, Shankarshan, and Vasudev. And in that secondary Chaturvyuha of that, the Lord Shankarshan, he expands as, when it is time for the creation of the entire material cosmic manifestation, he expands as Mahavishnu or Karuna Dakshay Vishnu. And this Mahavishnu is lying on the causal ocean. There is only one Mahavishnu. He is lying in the causal ocean, and in a state of spiritual state of sleep, Yoga Nidra. So when it is time for him, when he feels that it is time for the creation, then he starts exhaling. And when he exhales, with every breath, millions and millions of universes start coming from his nostrils and from the pore of his, from his breath and from the pore of his pores of his skin. You know how many millions of pores we have? We can't even count. We don't even see them. And millions. Oh, imagine one universe has millions of planets, of which one planet is this world, of which one country is India, of which one city is Mumbai, of which one place is Radha Gopinath, and one individual is you or me. So we can just see the connection between what one world is, what one universe is, and millions of universes coming from the pores of Mahavishnu. And in each universe, Mahavishnu expands as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, from whose navel Lord Brahma appears. That means every universe has a Lord Brahma, every universe has a Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, but there is one Mahavishnu. And then this Garbhodakshaya Vishnu in turn expands into, is in every living being's heart as Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. So Advaita Acharya is that Mahavishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead actually, who appears, who is the creator. He is the original of the Purusha Avatars, who is responsible for the creation of the entire material cosmic manifestation. And also Lord Shankarshan has another expansion in Sadashiv, which is the original Vishnu, who is the source of Lord Shankar. So the Sadashiv and Mahavishnu, actually they combine, they merge and they come in the form of Advaita Acharya. So actually Advaita Acharya is the combined form of both Sadashiv and Mahavishnu. So one can see, now we understand why we not only fast for him, but what his role is. But like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also comes as a devotee. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's primary purpose really, one of his main objectives was, he demonstrated as how a devotee can perfect his life. He came as a devotee. Only his intimate associates and later on others came to know about his true identity, but he covered it initially. So similarly, Advaita Acharya also, he was in that same his mood right through. So that was one of his glories, that he actually showed what true devotional service is, how one should be servant of the servant of the servants. That was his primary desire. His entire life, his desire was to be servant. And though he was he was a real leader. He was a leader of the Vaishnavas at that time. So he came much earlier. He came in 1430 or something like that, about 52 years before. So maybe 1434, I think. When he appeared, his parents, Kuvet Pandit and Lava Devi. So when she was pregnant with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so the parents moved from Shantipur to a place in Bengal called Navagram, and that's where Advaita Acharya was born. And but he spent much of his upbringing, time was back in Shantipur later on. But when, and of course he was an extraordinary personality, all those around him were quite struck with wonder. He travelled all over in his youth, in his childhood, when he was young. And he met many great devotees. That's when he also met his eventual spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri. He met him in Udupi, and he had travelled there. But the second time when he met him, then he took initiation. But we'll talk about that later. So initially when he travelled all over, and then he came back, by that time, he was clearly the leader of all, because the state of affairs was so poor in Navadvip. Shantipur is very close to Navadvip. So though he was staying in Navadvip, in Shantipur, but the situation was that and Navadvip was the special place. It was called the high seat of learning, because all the top scholars of all over would come there for instance, from Varanasi, the scholars came for studying Vedanta. From the south, Kanchipuram, they came for higher education. From Mithila, they came for other learnings. So everybody from all over was coming there to Navadvip. So in one sense it was academically of a very high standard, but unfortunately the people, even the scholars, were so attached to material life and prestige and power. I mean, you could have, there were millions of students there that time. It was a huge place, and you know, any time the ghats also, you see the people would be debating, discussing, intellectually challenging, but there was so much arrogance. It was mainly to show who's more learned or more powerful and how they could actually increase their material comforts. So there were many who were very wealthy, but they wasted a lot of money on very lavish weddings, and that whole culture was such that it was very upsetting to Advaita Acharya and the Vaishnavas. So they would meet regularly, at least 1 or 2 hours in Advaita Acharya's house, and he was actually spending most of his time in Navadvip because he wanted the association, and there were some Vaishnavas who were there in Navadvip. So though he was staying in Shantipur, but eventually he was spending much of his time in Navadvip. So when he came there, and all these the devotees were very dejected because they saw this, and it was not as if that because they felt they were in a minority. It was just that out of compassion they could see the suffering of people, but they could see that they were not willing to even consider what to do. Advaita Acharya was that way, was very, very respected, because he was not only even in the caste system he was a Brahmin, he happened to be a Brahmin, but he was also a very learned scholar and a very wise person. So people respected him, but nobody listened to him. So while he was strongly preaching Krishna consciousness even at that time, but nobody was listening. In fact, whenever the devotees had kirtan at Shivas Thakur's house in Shivas Angan, Shivas and his brothers, you know, Shripati, Srinidhi and Shiram, so they all the people in the Navadvip would actually criticize them heavily and say that we should actually throw them into the sea, they're putting us in danger, because the king, the Nawab, was a Muslim, and they said, you know, because of the noise they're creating, the Nawab, the Muslim leader, will come here and he will they will be all affected by it, and they will be the cause. So this kind of very critical view they had. So it was very demoralizing, dejected. They were very dejected by this. And actually, it was Advaita Acharya who kept inspiring them, and he was the optimistic person. And he said, "Don't lament, don't worry. I know that I have a strong feeling that the Lord will come." Then he said, actually, when it became too much, he said, "I vow that I will pray in such a way that I will see that the Lord descends. And if he doesn't descend, you just see what I do. I will assume my forearm form and I will sever everybody's, all these atheists' head," in his external anger that he said. And then Advaita Acharya actually took that up. So he went. Lord Chaitanya. But Lord Chaitanya came as, he had many names, Vishwambar, Nimai, in his childhood, Gaur Hari, but he covered all the devotees. But of course, the symptoms were there, and people could understand to some extent, because he was always a great debater, but he took, he had his. Just like Krishna had those naughty pastimes, Nimai Pandit also, Nimai as a child, and a lot of the same similar kind of mood, where he was, it also bordered on the light harassment of devotees, but the devotees loved it, you know. So he would always like to take the opposite position. So he would try to defeat the, confuse the devotees and talk just for the sake of you know, intensifying their love for him. So and they would wonder that, you know, he's such an extraordinary debater, extraordinary mind, extraordinary honest. When will he become a devotee? He would never admit that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would never admit that. But eventually, when he met Ishwarpuri and he became, he took initiation, and then he transformed. He started showing his. When he felt that it's time to spread the Harinam Sankirtan movement. You know, everything was planned, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed only 48 years, out of which 24 were prior to sannyas, and then the next 24, of which 18 he spent in Jagannath Puri. So when the time came, and then the transformation was taking place, and then of course the devotees were delighted and excited to see, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nimai Pandit, now becoming not only a scholar, he was already a scholar, but actually becoming a devotee. Now he's showing himself as a devotee. So they ran to Advaita Acharya's house to tell him, when the first symptoms appeared, and they said, you know, Nimai has become a devotee, and so on, after he took initiation. So Advaita Acharya actually told them that actually I had a dream, and in my dream I was studying the Bhagavad Gita, and I would study each slok, and each slok I had to understand the significance of that slok in connection to surrender to Krishna. And somehow there was one slok which I just couldn't make the connection, and I was extremely agitated, and I was in my dream, and I was feeling that I will fast, I will now, just till I get this knowledge and understanding how this slok is connected to surrender of Krishna, I will not eat anything. And then a voice came to me, you know, a beautiful personality appeared in front of me and said that actually you don't need to worry, because the Lord whom you prayed for has already appeared. And then that personality went away, and then the only vision that came in front of me revealed that he was the first to know that it is this Vishwambar is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is the Lord I prayed for. So that from there onwards, things started changing, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started getting, all these devotees were gravitated towards him, and then one after the other several pastimes took place. The other devotees also slowly came to know. One day Gadadhar Pandit, who is actually Srimati Radharani herself, one of the Panchatattva. So Gadadhar Pandit and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had come to Advaita Acharya's house, and Advaita Acharya was also very meticulous in his deity worship. So just seeing his bhakti and the way he was performing with such devotion, the deity worship, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was thinking about him, he actually fell unconscious. Like, he was actually just young, he was only 20 something at that time. And when he fell unconscious, immediately Advaita Acharya left the deities and took all the paraphernalia of deity worship and started immediately, within seconds, worshipping the fallen Nimai Pandit. And Gadadhar Pandit was astonished, and he says, "What are you doing?" You know, because he was probably 75 when he was a 20-year-old. You know, Gadadhar Pandit understood he is a great scholar, he is a great devotee, but that was the when he saw Advaita Acharya actually performing all the deity worship of on person, so-called human person who was actually on the ground, and he was bewildered. So then Advaita Acharya said, "Oh Gadadhar, how long are you going to consider him only as a young boy?" That was the first time that Gadadhar also understood that this is none other than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in this way, then when the devotees were so ecstatic, knowing that the Lord has come, so they then one after the other various pastimes were taking place. But when Advaita Acharya then, of course he knew, because the dream had come to him and he knew this Vishwambar is Lord Chaitanya, but then he said, I want the Lord to prove it. These are all pastimes. So, you know, they actually enhance the love not only among the devotees themselves and the Lord, so all for the sake of the Lord, but also for our benefit. So he said, I would like to, I will prove. So I will go to Shantipur now, and I will not return till the Lord actually calls me, and he puts his feet on my head, and then only and acknowledges that he is the Lord. Then only I'll return. Otherwise, I'm not going to return. He didn't tell anyone. He just thought, and he started walking. He went away to Shantipur. So a little while later, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would often come to Srivasa's house, and he came there and he told Srivasa's brother, Ramai Pandit, he said that you go to Shantipur and tell Advaita, give him this message that the Lord that you prayed for, the Lord that you fasted for, the Lord that you worshipped has already come. So you come here with your family and worship me. So Ramai Pandit went there, and Advaita Acharya was actually from a distance he could see Ramai Pandit coming. So he immediately knew that the Lord is actually is now revealing. You know, he could sense that now he's come to call me, and he was very, very happy. But he kept it to himself. When Ramai Pandit came, he said, why have you come? So Ramai Pandit said, well, my Lord, you know why I have come. Then he paused for a moment and he said, Where does it say in the scripture that Krishna is going to come in Navadvip in Kali Yuga? Where does it say? Tell me. So Ramai Pandit just didn't say anything, but he just smiled. He kept smiling. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, okay, tell me what, I mean, no, Advaita Acharya said, what is the message that Nimai Pandit has sent? Then he said, the message is that tell Advaita that the Lord has come and come and worship me. And on hearing that, Advaita Acharya, now he got the, he wanted the confirmation for the others. He already knew it. And then he was ecstatic. He was rolling on the ground. He was so happy. So then his wife and his sons, Achyutanand and two other sons, they all immediately went. But when they reached Navadvip, he told Ramai Pandit and I, we are going to hide in Nandan Acharya's house and don't tell anyone we have come. So, rare occasions, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would actually, just for his intimate associates, he would actually come to Srivas Thakur's house and sit on the throne and reveal himself, and then, but only for short moments, short periods. So at that time he had just, he came and sat on the throne and he roared, you know, and then he started calling out Advaita Acharya's house. Advaita Acharya's name. He had many names and one name was Nara. So he started shouting, Nara, Nara, I know you're hiding. I have already come. I want to meet you. I want to see you in person. So again he told Ramai Pandit, go and fetch him from Nandan Acharya's house. He's trying to hide from me. But I want to see him. I can't wait to meet him. Then they came, they worshipped him. The family came, they were, you know, they paid obeisances, they worshipped him and with all the paraphernalia. So then the Lord said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that I would like to bless you. I would like to give you anything you want. You take a benediction from me. So Advaita Acharya said, I don't need, my Lord, I have everything. He said, no, no, you have to. You must. He's saying, then grant me this, that anybody who commits the worst sins, most abominable sins, but if he chants your holy name sincerely, then you will deliver him. But those so-called mundane scholars and others who are offensive to Vaishnavas, and those who have been fortunate enough to have the strength of renunciation and still are offending Vaishnavas, don't deliver them. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I agree. And then he blessed him. That when then he said, he ordered him, he says, Advaita, dance for me. Now, you know, one would think that biologically a 75-year-old person, but it was they're all spiritual really. So he was one of the most graceful, wonderful dancers, Advaita Acharya. And then not just the grace, but he was ecstatic. And his dancing really caused everybody to enhance their Krishna consciousness, their love, and for the devotees. And he would just oftentimes he would do that. At one time he was dancing, and he just because he was in the mood of the separation of the gopis, and he was thinking of them, and he was while dancing at Shiva's house, and he just he couldn't be pacified. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not there. Shiva's Thakur and others, you know, great difficulty pacified him, and then they went for some errands, but again the symptoms arose, and he was in that kind of mood, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu happened to pass by, and he saw him there, and he said, again he was, so he embraced him and he picked him up, and he said again I told him that, you tell me what can I do for you. So Advaita Acharya said, I mean, I really have nothing. This was another occasion. You have given me anything. You have also fulfilled my desire by asking me to dance for you, which I have done. He said, no, you must ask. So then he said, show me that same form which Arjun saw many, many years ago, long, long time ago. And then right in front of Advaita Acharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed the universal form, wherein he showed all the millions of universes and mountains, rivers, the millions of hands, legs, mouths. You could see them devouring all the beings who were as time personified. So at that time Lord Nityanand was he understood, who was passing by nearby. So Lord Nityanand also, because he is none other than Lord Balaram, so he came and closed the door, and he also witnessed that universal form. And so in this way, this the intimacy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord and Advaita Acharya was very, very special. At that time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared, and I'd like to read this, what he said, just after he showed the universal form. He said, please hear the truth that I will now say. Anyone who neglects my servant and then worships me, he is the most degraded. He cuts me into his pieces by his behavior. His worship of me is like fire burning my body. The living beings are all my servants, but any living being who harms another will perish. Then he's telling Advaita that you are more dear to me than my own body. Anyone who offends you will not be able to face the fate that awaits him. If a sannyasi blasphemes any innocent person, that sannyasi will surely fall down. But I will deliver anyone who does not criticize anyone else and who chants the holy names. That is the truth. So, he took the occasion to show, to declare Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where Advaita Acharya's position was. And Advaita Acharya was, as Prabhupada explained, that he was an Acharya because the title was also given to him, primarily because he showed by his example. He was already automatically accepted because he was a very wise, learned person, but also because he showed not only for that generation, but for all times to come, that what is the true purpose of life, and that being the servant of the servant of the servants in whatever field we are in, that consciousness becomes the most important thing. Chaitanya Advaita Acharya was also, even before he had met, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas also, Advaita Acharya had actually initiated some of the closest intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Vasudev Dutt was his disciple. Then Yadunandan Acharya was one of the most intimate disciples of associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was also initiated. Yadunandan Acharya is the guru of Raghunath Das Goswami, who is one of the six Goswamis. Advaita Acharya also initiated Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's parents, Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Mata. So, he in his own right, he was a guru in the truest sense. And he was the leader of all, the natural leader for all. one of his most important pastimes, in fact many of his pastimes are such that where they show the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's important teachings actually come through his pastimes. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why he came in the parampara of Madhvacharya? Because Madhvacharya, two most prominent things were that one, he was strong worshipper of Lord Krishna, and second was that he was very strongly preaching against Mayavad impersonalism. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to establish that very, very much. And even you see Srila Prabhupada, he actually gave us this pranam mantra to everybody who followed him, and we sing this every day, many times perhaps. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Desha Tarine. So Srila Prabhupada also wanted to, because he was one of the foremost representatives of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for us and for years to come, for the ages to follow. So wanted to establish that impersonalism that actually kills Krishna in a way, and we can only approach Krishna finally as a person, and also that he wanted to establish the pure principles, principles of pure devotional service. So in that connection, Prabhupada also not only gave us a pranam mantra, but he also when he pleased the spiritual master Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he wrote a poem on one of his Vyas Pujas, or Bhaktisiddhanta's Vyas Puja, and he had written that absolute is sentient, thou hast proved impersonalism, impersonal calamities thou hast removed. So this Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur got so, he was so happy, so pleased with that, that oftentimes he would repeat it, and to show that my this disciple A.C. Bhaktivedanta, that time he was known as Abhay Charan, he has understood my mission. This is my mission, and he understood. So Prabhupada also proved it to us, that this is what we need to keep this in mind. So in the same way, this Advaita Acharya's pastime, where one of his famous ones was, he his burning desire was to be just the servant of the servants, and particularly his only service was for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But unfortunately or fortunately, he was already 52 when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born. So not only was old, also he happened to be the godbrother of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's guru, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's guru was Ishwar Puri, who also was a disciple of Madhanda Puri, and so also was Advaita Acharya. So the godbrother of our guru is to be worshipped as our guru. That is the normal Vaishnava etiquette. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu virtually worshipped Advaita Acharya as his guru. And here Advaita Acharya wanted to, or not only wanted, but actually served Lord Chaitanya as being his servant. So you know, there was a different. So he was craving for it, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu often would take the dust off his feet. And being younger and stronger, Advaita Acharya was powerless. You know, oftentimes he would forcibly take it also. So he was very much pained. And Radhanath Swami Maharaj mentions this often, that whenever he talks about Advaita Acharya, he mentions this point that this is so much different than what our situation is. Because honestly, if somebody was to glorify us, how can we feel pain? We may say we should, but we don't really feel that pain. And here he actually, it really pained him. It was the depth of his pain. So he resolved that I have to do something which will make Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he will actually beat me, and I will do some things which would make him do that. So he started, he said the only way is that I will preach impersonalism, because he knew that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's strong inclination, or strong desire was to establish the supremacy of the personality of Godhead, Krishna. So that's what he started doing. So he started, he was a very learned person himself. So he started giving lectures when he talked about that, you know, bhakti is only an intermediary stage. Bhakti is like just a mirror. But impersonalism is the true eyes. Because without the eyes, what is the use of a mirror? So he completely opposite. So word spread to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then once he and Nityananda Prabhu, they came there. And when Advaita Acharya saw him from a distance, so he started preaching even more intensely, loudly, you know, saying that this is the final, this is the most important, and impersonalism is the only, the jnana is the only glory, bhakti is only a stepping stone. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very, very angry. Again, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood, and he said, but I must fulfill the desire of my associates. That was his mood. But internally, that was his mood. Externally, he came very angry, and he came right into that lecture room where Advaita Acharya was giving the lecture, and he stormed in and said, who is... he stopped him and he said, "You now tell me this, which is the highest principle? Is it impersonalism, or is it... devotional service to the personality of Godhead?" And he, Advaita Acharya, loudly proclaimed that it is impersonalism is the supreme, is the highest. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just rushed up to him, and as Advaita Acharya himself had actually dreamed or wanted, exactly, he said he'll drag me from my hair, and he'll pull me down, and he'll beat me. That's exactly what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. He went up, and you know, it's shown he has a long beard, and we have a turban here, otherwise you see he has long white hair. So he dragged him by the hair, brought him down, and sat upon him and started beating him. And Sita Thakurani, his wife, was so really scared. She knew that this is the Lord, but still, you know, she was pleading that, you know, my Lord, he's an old Brahmin, you know, you'll kill him, you know, he'll die. And Advaita Acharya was in ecstasy. And again, immediately after that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then, you know, when he saw that Advaita Acharya was, he offered beautiful prayers, he actually clasped him, clasped his feet, and that was his fulfillment. You know, he felt that this is really what I wanted, to once and for all to establish that he is my supreme master and I am his servant. He's accepted me. Basically, he wanted at least once to know that he accepted me, and that was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's way of expressing that, fulfilling his desire, even though externally it may sound quite unusual. And another pastime where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took on one of those unusual days when he sat on the throne of Shiva Thakur's house and called everyone, and he was displaying his true nature as a personality of Godhead. At that time he was asking everyone, tell me, what do you want, you know, what is your desire? And none of the devotees would ask anything for themselves. One would say that my father is not a devotee, please make him a devotee. So one would say that, you know, my wife is struggling, please help her become a devotee. Somebody said, my children, you know. So it was all for others. It was out of compassion for others that they were asking that. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu turned to Srivas Thakur and said, what is your desire? So Shiva said that, my Lord, your mother, Sachi Mata, is a mother to all of us. And we worship her as a mother, and she is the purest devotee we know. And so we would like that you give her devotional service, pure devotional service. And immediately Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no. So all the devotees were shocked that his own mother, you know, such a glorious person, who had been so much pained actually when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas at the age of 24. Her older son also, Vishwarup, had taken sannyas earlier. So everyone was shocked. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, because she has offended a devotee, so I cannot give her. He said, how is it possible? It's not possible that she could offend anyone. Then he said, no, she has offended Advaita Acharya. So then when the devotees turned to Advaita Acharya, Advaita Acharya was completely incredulous, saying, what? I mean, I am worshipping, she is my mother, she is the most worshipable object, she is like a deity to me. And then he started glorifying her, and in that glorification of her, he was so ecstatically glorifying her that he fell unconscious. So as soon as he fell unconscious, Sachimata took the opportunity and took the dust off his feet. That is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, unless she takes the dust off Advaita Acharya's feet, then only I will offer. So she took the dust, and then seeing her condition, and you know, she had so much of respect and for him, that she also fell unconscious. So the devotees were left wondering that here is Advaita Acharya meditating on Sachimata as his mother and is unconscious, and here is Sachimata who is meditating on Advaita Acharya and unconscious, both are unconscious. So both you know, and then that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that she he was very happy, but actually Sachimata had not committed any offense, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to just show this through his example, that even for a minor mental mistake also, even if it is mother, criticizing devotees is the worst offense. So actually Sachimata, what had happened was that Sachimata had never spoken to also anyone, because she was such a pure Vaishnavi. But she had, you know, her older son Vishwaroop was a very special person. Actually Vishwaroop is also none other than Lord Balaram. And Vishwaroop had, he was, from the childhood he had no material inclinations, and he was such a pure and very beautiful looking boy. Very sattvic, very glorious, you know, he was like somebody from another world actually. And when he came, when he was, and he would love to spend all his time with Advaita Acharya's house. And when Vishwambar, when he was a young boy, his mother would send him there and ask him to bring your son back, bring your brother for prasad. So they all used to see Vishwambar, and they would wonder, why is Vishwambar attracting so much Krishna consciousness in us? They couldn't understand that. So Vishwaroop would go back, have prasad, and then come back, and then again he would come back to Advaita Acharya's house. So whole day he would spend there basically. That was his schedule. So she had been thinking that, okay, because of his association with Advaita Acharya, you know, so he's left home, and they were very much pained because they loved him. You know, he was, who, imagine having such a child, you know, they get so attached. But then they had Vishwambar, that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then he was the object of their worship and eyes and everything. And then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, so she was thinking that in her mind that it is his Advaita only, because his association, his influence, in her mind, she never spoke to anyone. And actually she was saying out of respect and affection, but it was in her mind that, you know, this, they call him Advaita, but actually he's Dvaita, you know, he's dual thinking. So because she had that thought, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as the also the Paramatma, he understands our thought also. So he wanted to bring this, that not, you know, to establish it, and using his glorious mother as an example, that even such an intimate person as her, and who's actually the purest devotee who can never commit any offense, but in this pastime, because she happened to think in a negative way about Advaita Acharya, even that was not acceptable. So that also, it was in his place in Shantipur, in Advaita Acharya's place in Shantipur, when after the Lord took sannyas, that Sachimata requested Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that at least stay nearby, relatively nearby, so that, you know, on and off we get a chance to meet you. So then he, from there he went to Jagannath Puri, and of the last 24 years in that sannyas period, 18 years he spent in Jagannath Puri. So and then the devotees would go to Jagannath Puri every year for the Rath Yatra, and they would form seven parties dancing in front of the Rath, and Advaita Acharya was always the leader of one of the groups, one of the parties. And then there's a very beautiful pastime where once a sannyasi came to their house, to Advaita Acharya's house, and Advaita Acharya was he had become a grihastha. Also, Madhavendra Puri, his guru, who had become extremely, he was so. Now, Madhavendra Puri, we have to say a thing about him. I mean, Madhavendra Puri, can imagine his exalted position, that he is the one who initiated Lord Nityanand. He is the one who is also the guru of Advaita Acharya. And he spent many, many long periods, many months at Shantipur when Advaita Acharya was younger. He was very close to him. So he's the one who actually instructed Advaita Acharya to get married. And by that time, he got married when he was 50 years old. So the external purpose was that, you know, even after he leaves this world, because, you know, if a single person, a sannyasi, is in a renounced order, and if he's, then the deity worship, which was so exalted, at least the family can continue. But internally, of course, it was that Advaita Acharya would be also the prominent person to preach to householders, because that was also the need. So he, Madhavendra Puri was the person who advised him or suggested to him to get married. So therefore, here and when this being a grihastha, Advaita Acharya was a ideal grihastha. So he was very hospitable. Anyone who came would never leave without being offered prasad and rest. And so he duly washed the sannyasi's feet and he asked him rest. And he told him that I'll prepare some prasad. So the sannyasi said, "No, I will not have prasad unless you answer my question." So he said, but at least you have prasad first and then I'll answer all your questions." He said, "No, I will not have till you answer my question." So he said, "Okay, what is your question?" So the sannyasi asked Advaita Acharya, "What is the relationship between Keshav Bharati Maharaj and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?" Now, Keshav Bharati Maharaj was the sannyas guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took initiation from Ishwar Puri, but when he took sannyas, he took it in that parampara of Keshav Bharati Maharaj. So now the question internally to Advaita Acharya was that I can answer it in two ways. In one way, on the material level, one can say that he is Keshav Bharati Maharaj is the guru. But obviously, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is actually the leader of. Everyone is his are the subjects really. So then he said, "Let me first start by giving the material, the external situation." So he said, "The relationship between them is that Keshav Bharati Maharaj is the guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." As soon as he said it, his 5-year-old son Achyutanand came. He was playing outside, and in fact he had no clothes, he was just roaming. He came running and he was full of dust. He was playing in the mud outside. He came running in, and he was 5 years old, and he was so angry, and he started speaking to Chaitanya, to Advaita Acharya, saying that, what did I hear you say, my father? Did you say that Keshav Bharati is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's guru? And you don't know that he is the Supreme Personality? You are supposed to be my father. I am supposed to be taking guidance from you. How will I ever learn if you are an illusion?" And he started saying, and Advaita Acharya was in ecstasy. You know. He was stunned because all his feelings. Obviously, we know the relationship that they had. And when he saw his 5-year-old son, he just started embracing him. And he said, I am your son and you are my father. And then Achyutanand was very embarrassed. And the sannyasi was watching all this, he's saying, "Like father, like son." Then he bowed down and he left. As soon as he left, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just entered, and Achyutanand came running to him, and very affectionately he embraced him, and he took him in his lap. He was very, very fond of him. So one occasion, Advaita Acharya wanted to celebrate the disappearance of Madhavendra Puri in a very grand way. Because Madhavendra Puri, as we saw, he was actually the seed, literally the seed of the tree of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Everything sprung from that. And he had already left the planet before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had come. So when he So this was done, and Advaita Acharya, it is said, gave everything that he had in that celebration. Everything. And all the devotees were engaged. Like Sachi Mata said that, I will take the responsibility. My service is to serve everyone, all the thousands of devotees who come. Nityanand Prabhu said, I will make sure that all those who come will be my... I will honor them, all the guests, I'll take care of them. Like that, each one was taking that, and it was done on a very grand scale to celebrate. So it was basically to highlight the greatness of Madhavendra Puri and how important he was in the disciplic succession of in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, and finally, a very important fact which not many are aware, that Advaita Acharya, we know, was the cause of the Lord coming here. Can you imagine just one person, and 500 years ago, one person actually calling out in such a way that the Lord has to listen to. Of course, only Krishna can call Krishna. So, it's not any person who can do it. But he was the responsible person who was the cause of the Lord to come here. And he was also the cause of the Lord returning back. Because when the Lord actually just towards the end, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already established the Sankirtan movement and his instructions had been taken by his followers, and he knew that it was now, momentum was gathering. At that time Advaita Acharya sent a very mysterious message through Damodar Pandit to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Swarup Damodar Goswami Maharaj and perhaps Damodar Pandit himself understood what the message was. But the gist was that, my Lord, you have come here to this world to establish. Now, what you have come for has already been accomplished. Whenever you want, you can return back. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, from that time onwards, virtually almost instantly after that, he started demonstrating the most extreme separations in the mood of Srimati Radharani for Krishna. He started manifesting those symptoms, and that was in the later part of his year before he disappeared. And it is said that Advaita Acharya, in his worshipable deities, Madan Gopal, he collected all his friends and others at that time. He stayed 25 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu departed also. So he stayed about 125 years, which was also what Krishna actually stayed when he came here on this world. So at that time, Advaita Acharya called everyone and then had a very rip-roaring kirtan. And then he just got up and went in the DT room and never returned. He went back to where he was in the causal ocean, in his yoga nidra state. So what Advaita Acharya has actually left behind for us is many, many things, but some of the most prominent things, if you have to summarize it, is basically that his fervent desire, and which he actually exemplified and acted, and that is left behind for us, is how one should try to be the servant of the servant in the truest form, in mind, body and spirit, completely thinking how we can serve the Lord only through the medium of serving all the devotees. So, end here. So, Advaita Acharya ki jai, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Hare Krishna, there are few announcements. Next journey of self-discovery course in the temple will be conducted from March 25th to 30th by His Grace Brajmohan Prabhu. Timings